Welcome, welcome to the Instructional Leadership Show. I'm your host, Justin Bader. Leave a comment and let me know where you are tuning in from. I am your host, Justin Bader from the Principles Center. And this is episode 55 of the Instructional Leadership Show, Assessing Teacher Practice, Performance, Skill, and Behavior. Each week on the Instructional Leadership Show, it is our mission to help you confidently get into classrooms every day, have feedback conversations that change teacher practice, and discover your best opportunities for school improvement. And what we do is we work through 6 monthly themes according to the High Performance Instructional Leadership Roadmap. And if you're familiar with my book, Now We're Talking, 21 Days to High Performance Instructional Leadership, you will recognize some of these themes. And they're in this order for a reason, that we start with productivity, about making time to get into classrooms. Then we focus on actually getting into classrooms and having feedback conversations with teachers. And during the month of April, we're on the framework stage where we're talking about the set of shared expectations that we use to discuss practice, that we use to gather evidence, and that we use ultimately to evaluate teacher performance. So that is where we are focused right now. We, of course, are making some adjustments to our emphasis and to the nature of what we're talking about because of the current COVID-19 pandemic that's going on, because schools are closed just about everywhere and we don't know for how long. But we are going to continue thinking about some of these issues around teacher practice, even if getting back to normal takes a while, even if we're not able to immediately apply those principles and practices in the typical way. So thank you so much for being here. Leave a comment and do let me know if you are tuning in. I can see we've got quite a few people tuning in live now. We have a rubric for each stage of a roadmap, and I wanted to share this rubric with you just to get a sense of kind of what we're working from in terms of shared expectations for teaching practice. Our vision for you at the Principal Center is that you would be able to have regular evidence-based conversations with teachers using the language of a shared instructional framework. That's something you've probably heard me talk about quite a bit, because that shared instructional framework, I believe, can really raise the level of those conversations and can really raise the impact of those conversations. And our essential question for today, we're going to focus a bit on evaluation, because this is the time of year when typically administrators are writing teacher evaluations. Again, this is a weird year. There's not much we can do about that. And you may have had to set aside certain aspects of your evaluation system. You may not have been able to do traditional formal observations, but here we are. So we are going to press forward. Welcome, Adam, tuning in from the UK. Thanks so much for being here. Adam, if you're joining us live, let me know where you're watching and where you're joining us from, whether you're on Facebook or LinkedIn or wherever you might be watching. Our essential question for today is, how can we make evidence-based appraisals of teacher behavior, skill, and performance without mixing them up? And I wanted to clarify the difference and the distinction between these three things, behavior, skill, and performance, because often the decisions that we have to make as leaders depend on an accurate assessment of one or more of those, but we have to be careful that we're not making those decisions based on the wrong one of those. For example, when we are doing teacher evaluations at the end of the year, typically teacher evaluations are structured as a formal evaluation process, right? Where we're evaluating performance, not necessarily skill. There may be some rating scales for skill in your evaluation system. We are not evaluating people based on their behavior typically. We're looking at performance. So I wanted to kind of clarify some distinctions between those so that we can use the right definitions for the right decisions that we need to make. So that is what we will come back to today. So let's take a look at our a couple of themes that are often going to come up on this show. I was watching a video of like a Holderness Family video where they did a DIY bagpipe. They made their own bagpipe, obviously kind of a quarantine craft activity. And they made a bagpipe out of a trash bag and some recorders and a straw and things like that. It was funny. But if you've looked at, or if you know anything about how bagpipes work, I didn't, but they explained this in the video. Bagpipes have an instrument that you play, and they were using a recorder. It's called the chanter. That's the one that you put your fingers on and play the notes with. But they also have one or more other pipes that you don't actually play, but that air comes out of, and those are called the drones. And the drones give the bagpipe kind of that characteristic sound where there's one note, or in the case of this particular bagpipe that I have on the screen here, three notes that play a chord continuously, and then the notes that the player, the piper is playing on top of that, play over that backdrop. I thought that was kind of an interesting concept. I wasn't familiar with that before. And it occurred to me as I was preparing for this episode's show that I kind of have some drones here on this show, these constant notes that are playing underneath whatever it is that we're talking about. So three drones, three constant notes or themes that you will often hear from me are, first, get the importance of getting into classrooms, the importance of frequent classroom visits, getting into classrooms 500 times a year. And I've got my book right here. Now we're talking 21 Days to High Performance Instructional Leadership. Again, welcome to all our new members who joined us last week. We are getting another shipment, actually two shipments in this week. So if you're waiting on a book, we'll get that out to you as soon as we get them. And the audiobook is available for you in your member dashboard. And if you're not a member, you can pick that book up on Amazon or Barnes & Noble, wherever you order books online. You can also get it directly from SolutionTree. So frequent classroom visits. A big one that I'm focused on in the next year is shared expectations via instructional frameworks. I truly believe that so much of the opportunity that we have in front of us for getting better at what we do is lies in the process of getting aligned on our expectations and writing rubrics for teaching practice. And then the third theme that we'll be talking about more in the coming weeks is evidence-driven leadership. All right, so with those preambles in mind, let's dive in. And again, if you've just joined us, welcome. This is the Instructional Leadership Show, episode 55, and we are talking about assessing teacher performance. Now, performance, I believe, you know, there's some kind of overlapping definitions here that I wanted to get into some of the nuances of. I believe that performance is ultimately what we as leaders are accountable for. You know, we are accountable for ensuring that all of our teachers are performing at an acceptable level, ideally an excellent level. And that's what we hold our teachers and other staff accountable for, is their performance, which is a result of skill applied through behavior over time. Now, there's a lot to unpack in just that one sentence there, but I believe that skill is not enough by itself, right? We don't just want to hire and employ skilled teachers. We want to actually employ teachers who will do a good job, and that requires action, right? That requires behavior over time. And I don't know if you've ever experienced this in your career as an administrator, but I think it's not uncommon, and I experience this personally, where sometimes you will have someone who is highly skilled, but their performance will deteriorate either temporarily or as kind of part of a long-term decline because of factors that are influencing their behavior. Sometimes you will see, if you've had maybe a male teacher who's going through a divorce. I've seen this particular pattern play out many times. If you have someone who is going through a divorce, often that can lead to depression, can lead to distraction, can be very stressful. So even though the skill level has not changed, the performance changes because the behaviors are being impacted by everything else that's going on in that person's life. And we, you know, many of us who have been in that principal role have had to say to people, you know, I know you're going through some really tough times. What can I do to support you and make sure that you are still the teacher that your students need you to be even while you're going through this? I know you still have the talent, you still have the skills that you've developed, and these personal struggles that are really weighing you down. What can I do to support you to ensure that the bottom line for students is still the bottom line, that your performance is still meeting students' needs? So skill is not enough. Behavior has to come through for it as well. My second point about performance here is playing on that note, that continuous note of getting into classrooms frequently. I believe that performance should be assessed based on more than a single performance, right? The more evidence, the better. I don't like the metaphor of the recital, right? I don't think for teaching practice that the best way for us to assess it is the way that you would assess, a child's progress in their piano lessons at a recital. You know, there's one performance at the end, it's at the end of the year, you play one song, hopefully you don't mess up, good luck. I don't think that's the right metaphor or the right mindset for evaluating teacher practice. Yet, that is kind of how we set up the formal evaluation process. And honestly, that's why so many people right now are up a little bit of a creek when it comes to their teacher evaluations, is because they set it up as a recital. All right, at the end of the year, I'm gonna come observe you. You get one shot. You better not mess up any notes. You better not mess up any of your dance steps, or, you know, maybe depending on what kind of recital you have in mind as your metaphor. That does not really work for teaching, because teaching is not that kind of thing. So I believe in my heart of hearts that we need to get into classrooms frequently, that teaching is something that happens all throughout the year. It's not something that we can just pin all of our understanding and evaluation on a final high stakes performance at the end of the year. When I say performance, I mean every day, long-term performance. And that is what we're evaluating people on as employees, right? We're evaluating them not on what they're capable of, not on their efforts, but on what they're actually doing, the results they're actually getting for students. Behavior, yeah, we'll talk about it in just a second, but you know, behavior is part of it. Behavior is necessary. Skill is necessary, but they have to combine to produce performance. What happens if we only look at skill or behavior? Well, let's talk about skill here. By the way, let me know what you think about this. I'm drawing some distinctions between things that we often kind of lump together. So I'd love to know your thoughts on this. I just wrote down that skill is what people are capable of, right? This is their ability that they're bringing to the task. And sometimes we can see that skill, sometimes we see it in action, but there are a lot of skills that successful teachers bring to their work that may never really be visible to us, right? The skill that they have in planning, for example, you know, sometimes it's hard to tell, did this lesson go really well just because it happened to go really well? Did it go really well even though it's a challenging topic because you planned really well? Or did it go well because you taught it straight out of the book and you totally winged it, but it was a really well-designed lesson from the curriculum? Well, often it's very hard to tell that in the moment if you're just observing, if you're not talking with the teacher, if you're not getting deep into the curriculum so that you know what materials teachers are being provided with in the first place. So skill, you know, skill does matter. Skill is, you know, something that we're responsible for helping teachers develop, but it's not specifically what we hold people accountable for. We hold people accountable for performance. And I think one of the reasons that administrators are the right people to hold teachers accountable and performance is the right thing to hold teachers accountable for is that as leaders, we are responsible for the environment that teachers work in. Now, if you've ever worked in multiple schools, if you've worked maybe in a very high performing school and then a very low performing school, or maybe you worked in a very high functioning school and then you transferred to another school and you found that it was very dysfunctional, you have personal experience, my friend, with this phenomenon that performance largely depends on the environment. For a given level of skill, performance is going to depend on the conditions that you are working under. And as leaders, we are responsible for those conditions. And that's another one of my frequent steady notes about instructional leadership, that we are responsible for the conditions that teachers work under. And even the most highly skilled teacher may be unsuccessful, may fail in terms of their performance if the environment is not conducive to the work that needs to be done. So I think there's a beauty in the design of this, that we are responsible for the environment and that we are responsible for assessing teacher performance, knowing what we know. And I think we've probably all given teachers some slack if you've ever been in a situation where you've had a teacher and you have to put them in kind of an unpleasant teaching situation or just a very big challenge, like a high school teacher who has to teach 5 completely different subjects, right? We know if we do that to someone, if we say, you know what, I need you to teach algebra and social studies and a section of PE and also art, like I'm just gonna give you 5 different people's jobs and you're gonna have to do a different job every period of the day. We know that that is going to be a more challenging situation than someone who can say teach five or six sections of the same thing all day long and really nail the planning and really have the routines down, we know when we need to cut some people some slack based on the conditions that we're asking them to work with under. And those conditions also include other people that we're asking them to work with. So lots to consider there as far as skill. Let's talk about behavior, the third element that we're considering today. Behavior is, of course, what people do. It's what's visible to us when we get into the classroom, or it's what I call the above the surface of the water aspects of the iceberg of practice. Right? There's a lot that's beneath the surface, a lot of thinking and planning and decision-making that makes up practice that's that kind of below the surface of the water, you know, this lower portion of the iceberg. But there is a portion that's visible above the surface, and that's why it's so useful to get into classrooms. That's why we can visit for a few minutes or we can visit for an entire period and observe. There are things that we can see that people are doing. So behavior often is what produces the evidence that we're running with. But it's not enough by itself, but it is the starting point. It's not necessarily an indicator of skill. It's not necessarily a true indicator of someone's practice. And we have to be careful not to confuse compliance behaviors with true performance. And I think when we get really serious, I was planning a webinar on this actually, because I think it's a very serious issue that we need to talk about. When we get very, very serious about instructional leadership, we have to be careful that we're not pushing so hard for certain desired behaviors that we're bypassing teachers' professional judgment and skill. So I think we have to be careful when it comes to behavior, because behavior is not everything. It's only one thing, but it's very important because it produces the evidence that we use to drive the whole process. So we talked about performance, skill, and behavior. And I think those three together make us ready to talk about teacher practice. So this might be a decent writer downer or a decent screenshot to take here. Hopefully I'm not making a weird face if you take a screenshot here, but teacher practice I define as the exercise of professional judgment and skill in the service of student learning. Teacher practice is the exercise of professional judgment and skill in the service of student learning. Now, I've included the word professional there, and I've included judgment and skill there very intentionally. I don't believe there ultimately is any such thing as a teacher-proof curriculum. I believe in having excellent teaching materials that are quick and efficient to use and easy to understand and straightforward and well-designed for both teachers and students. But I don't believe there is any universe in which teaching can happen without the exercise of professional judgment and skill. Do you agree? Let me know what you think. Give me a yes or no. Give me an agree or an amen or a contrary comment if you would like. But I believe that teacher practice is the exercise of professional judgment and skill in the service of student learning. And here is where this all comes together. Here is how this fits and gives us some important takeaways as instructional leaders when it comes to evaluation. Too often, we take our specific expectations for behavior and make them the whole enchilada. We take something that really should just be one part of the whole picture of teacher practice, and we say, well, that's all I care about. We take expectations for behavior and confuse them with expectations for practice. And this is especially true when we get very, very serious about our instructional leadership work. And we start to kind of police people and we say, hey, I wanna see this. I wanna see your lesson plans in this template. I wanna see those lesson plans turned in on time. I wanna see those lessons list a standard that they're aligned with. And those are all behaviors that might help us in the overall process of leading, teaching, and learning, but that are distinct from practice. Right? Turning in a lesson plan that has a standard on it and has an objective written on it and has the learning activities spelled out and the I do, we do, you know, all the different statements or whatever your format is for lesson plans. Turning in lesson plans is a behavior that you may require, but it's not the same as teaching practice. It's not the decision making that's at the heart of teaching. It may be an artifact that, you know, if people have done lesson planning, it may give you evidence that they did that thinking and decision making. But we have to not confuse one for the other. And we have to be careful not to bypass teacher judgment, because it's in that central cognitive work of teacher judgment that we have the biggest opportunities to improve and impact practice. So we said just a moment ago that evidence comes from behavior, right? When we get into classrooms, we see what teachers are actually doing. We see what students are actually doing. We hear the conversation. We look at the work. So being there in person gives us that evidence. And then, of course, it's our job as instructional leaders to document that evidence, to take rich, detailed notes. You might even take photographs of student work. You might take video or audio, depending on your setup, but we need to get that documentation there so that when we talk about it later, we have something to talk about. We have specific shared evidence that we can discuss in a post-conference. And that post-conference is so important for making meaning of what we saw. The evidence does not speak for itself, right? Because if evidence was all we needed, that would mean that behavior was all that mattered. Right? And if we are going to assess teacher practice, if we are going to evaluate teachers on their performance and understand and try to develop teachers in terms of their practice, we need to get into the thinking and decision-making that went into what we saw. It's not just about the behaviors. It's not just about what happens above the surface. It's about what happens beneath the surface. And that's why it's so important to have that post-observation conversation and to have it using the shared language of an instructional framework. So, a little bit of a soapbox, a little bit of me on my bagpipe sounding some of those familiar notes about getting into classrooms, having evidence-based feedback conversations, and having truly open-ended conversations where we listen. We hear what the teacher's thinking about. We hear the dilemmas that they're facing and the decisions that they're having to make. And we look for ways that as instructional leaders, we can create more ideal conditions for that work to take place. Now, we're in a strange time, right? I've acknowledged that. It's hard to say anything these days without acknowledging the strange time that we are in with many schools physically closed, but digitally open, teaching online, maybe providing materials, maybe teaching lessons, maybe doing live classes, maybe doing videos. I don't know what you guys are doing. You're doing something, probably, and you have to get some things done as far as teacher evaluation, but we know we're going to have a different reality for a while. It's, you know, we're not going to be able to physically get into classrooms and observe and do the things that we're accustomed to doing. So what can we do now? Three things that I want to encourage you to focus on as an instructional leader and as you work with teachers in developing their practice and evaluating their performance. Number one, we can still talk about practice. Even if you cannot physically get into classrooms, you can check in with your teachers. You can talk about the new skills and the new practices that teachers are employing to teach remotely, whatever that's looking like in your school. We can talk about practice. And as we talk about practice, we can start to document the shared expectations that we're developing and form those into rubrics, or what I call instructional frameworks. I highly recommend that you start doing that for anything that you want to be a shared expectation. You know, don't just try to have that conversation casually and use only casual conversations to spread those expectations and to get everybody on the same page. At some point, you know, the conversations are great for developing and reinforcing and refining those expectations, but at some point you've got to put it in writing. Third, I want to encourage you to focus on skill development. Now, I'm sure you have had to learn some new skills personally to deal with this new reality, and teachers are having to learn new skills to serve their students in a very different way. So those three things, I think, will keep us busy as instructional leaders. I know you've still got to make some decisions as far as evaluation. We've talked about that in previous episodes here on the Instructional Leadership Show. But I hope these distinctions between behavior, skill, and performance have been useful. And I want to encourage you to continue to talk about practice, even as you make those decisions about evaluation, however you are making them. If you are a member of the Instructional Leadership Association, I want to point you to two resources that can be of great help. Number one is the Instructional Framework Development Program. This is a teacher-facing program that you can share with your teachers to get them enlisted in the process of writing those rubrics. You know, so if you think, okay, we're teaching one flipped learning video lesson a week for every class. Okay, maybe that's your expectation. What does that look like? Get your teachers to articulate that with you. Learn, you know, lead that process. Don't completely hand it off. but get teachers involved in articulating those expectations so you can get everyone on the same page and you can raise the bar for everyone. If you need the link and you're a member, let me know and I can get you the link to that. You can share that with your teachers. And I also have some training for you as the instructional leader on how this whole process works. I can send you that as well. The second resource that I wanted to share with you, if you're a member, you should have an invitation to this in your inbox right now. Tomorrow, this Thursday, April 23rd, Dr. Robin Jackson is joining us for the roundtable to discuss working with teachers in this new reality that we find ourselves in, and how we provide support, how we provide accountability, how we provide feedback, how we provide instructional leadership in the circumstances that we find ourselves in. This is a roundtable discussion. You're welcome to just listen in, but you're also welcome to be a part of our video panel. If you want to be a panelist, let me know in the chat tomorrow on our roundtable. And again, that's for members. If you are a member, you should have an invitation in your inbox. Let us know if you need that link. I also want to encourage you to check out Robin Jackson's podcast, School Leadership Reimagined, because she just has tremendous training and resources and insight for you on culture and expectations and mission and vision and that whole side of school leadership. So definitely check out Dr. Robin Jackson's podcast. One more thing that is coming up soon, you'll hear more from me about this, on Changing Teacher Practice, we're getting ready to open registration for our flagship program, the High Performance Instructional Leadership Certification Program, which is all about developing the instructional leadership skill of changing teacher practice through informal observations, through the evaluation process, through developing shared written expectations. All of that is coming your way soon in the High Performance Instructional Leadership Certification Program. And we're going to have both individual and group registration options. I know it's kind of a weird time as far as PD and funding. It's very difficult to get people there in person, but this is an online program. And we'll have, again, individual or kind of purchase order or group registration options. So again, tomorrow is our session. Carlos, thanks for tuning in. You'll get an email from me this afternoon with a link for that. Thanks for being a member. Great to see you here. That is it for today's Instructional Leadership Show. This has been episode 55. I'm Justin Bader, and I'll see you next week. Take care.